Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from Parade Magazine. Question number one, which artist does Paul McCartney credit with teaching him everything he knows? Was that A, Picasso, B, Elvis Presley, C, Little Richard, or D, John Lennon? So who taught Paul everything he knows, anyway? And question number two, who is the only country artist to have had a top 20 hit on the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart for six straight decades? Was that A, Hank Williams, B, Dolly Parton, C, Willie Nelson, or D, Loretta Lynn? Six straight decades of top 20 hits. Who holds that record, anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of September 22nd. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1998, that Elvis Presley was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame, and in 1991, that Nirvana's album Nevermind was released, and in 1985, that the first Farm Aid concert was held in Champaign, Illinois. That show raised $10 million for U.S. farmers, and finally, it was 80 years ago today, 1943, that Kate Smith finished her war bond radio appeal. She had stayed on the air 13 continuous hours and collected $39 million in bond pledges. This was indeed a memorable weekend in music history.
Fogs rolling in off the East River bank like a shroud. It covers Meeker Street, fills the alleys women sleep, hides the shepherd from the sheep.
Simon and Garfunkel's Bleecker Street introduces our folk music news. It's titled, Paul Simon is beginning to accept the hearing loss that makes it difficult for him to perform. This is published in LATimes.com, September 12, 2023, by Jonah Valdez. Months after Paul Simon announced that he had lost hearing in his left ear, the singer-songwriter says he is still coming to terms with his new disability. I haven't fully digested it, Simon told an audience during a Saturday Q&A at the Toronto International Film Festival. I haven't accepted it completely, but I'm beginning to. The former Simon and Garfunkel performer was at TIFF for the world premiere of quote-unquote, In Restless Dreams, the music of Paul Simon. His documentary with Oscar-winning filmmaker Alex Gibney. The film follows the folk icon as he recorded his new album, Seven Psalms. Simon said the album's concept and lyrics for his first full-length recording since 2018 came to him in a series of dreams. He described the 33-minute recording, released as a single track, as an argument I'm having with myself about belief or not. But for the first time in his career, his hearing loss has kept him from his normal routine of touring once an album is complete. During the panel discussion, Simon shared the difficulty of performing and singing along with one other instruments, such as an electric guitar or drums, due to his deaf left ear. He called the situation frustrating, but said he can still hear himself play the guitar. "I play the guitar every day," Simon said, remaining hopeful that he could still find a way to perform live and tour. "It's the instrument that allows me to express myself creatively, but it's also where I go for solace if I'm temporarily wounded by life." Something that happens to you when you have some sort of disability that changes your awareness, that changes your interaction with facts of life, Simon said, reflecting on his hearing loss. "You just see things with a different perspective, and you're surprised by the change. I'm not sure at this point that I can say what it is I've learned, but I'm getting new information in a new way that is new to me." Simon revealed his deafness in a May interview with the Times of London, sharing that his hearing went while he was writing seven Psalms. He said doctors have been unable to explain the reason for his hearing loss, which initially left him frustrated and annoyed, but not angry, because I thought it would pass. It would repair itself. He said the possibility of no longer performing isn't completely a bad thing, commenting that not all of his songs are even meant to be sung live. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, "Neuroscientists Want to Make Music Science Studies More Diverse." This is published in Forbes by Eva Amson on the 31st of August, 2022. Research on how human brains perceive music has traditionally only focused on Western music and the people who listen to it. But researchers are gradually realizing that this needs to change, and that generalizations of music neuroscience need to include all music and all music listeners. A recent summary of what we've learned about the neuroscience of music over the past few decades describes how people make predictions about the music they hear and how the brain responds depending on whether their expectations were met or not. Brains, in effect, react differently to music that sounds unusual and unexpected compared to a very predictable chord change. That research focused specifically on the melody, harmony, or rhythm of the music. A key suggestion has been made to leave out the predictability of harmony in such articles and studies, since harmony is a concept that's very closely tied to Western music, but doesn't necessarily work the same way in other types of music. Research also could expand the notion of rhythm so that it includes a wider variety of rhythms and take into account how music is perceived by the listener. After all, how predictable someone finds a segment of music depends on their own experience. It's not only important to account for more diverse music stimuli beyond mainly Western music, but also to include more people from different cultural backgrounds in these sorts of research studies. There are already some signs that neuroscientific studies about music perception are becoming more inclusive of non-Western cultures. One recent study, for example, describes how music perception is different for people who listen to Western music from those who do not. It might take a while for diverse research studies like this to catch up with the body of knowledge that's already out there, but eventually, researchers' understanding of how human brains perceive music will be more detailed and applicable to everyone. The Police, Every Breath You Take, introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled, 10 Reasons Why The Police's Every Breath You Take is a Timeless Hit. 40 years on, The Police's catchy yet kind of creepy single remains universally beloved, as proven by science. This is published in CBC.ca. Stuart Berman, 15th of June, 2023. When you think of the most impactful years in pop music history, 1983 has to be right up there. It was the year Michael Jackson's Thriller hit number one on the Billboard charts in February and stayed on the throne for the next 37 weeks. David Bowie dropped the biggest selling album of his career in Let's Dance. And the nascent MTV was making multi-platinum eye candy out of freaky fashionistas like Prince, Culture Club, Duran Duran, and Cyndi Lauper. But in the midst of all these big sounds and bigger hair, The Police's Every Breath You Take managed to worm its way into the darkest recesses of our collective psyche en route to becoming the top-selling single of 1983. Quite a feat for a moody mid-tempo track that's essentially about stalking your ex-lover. The song has also propelled the chart-topping success of the UK group's fifth and ultimately final album, Synchronicity, which was released 40 years ago this week. To mark the occasion, music critic Maura Johnson talks about the impact Every Breath You Take had on pop music in the 1980s and its enduring appeal four decades on. From that conversation and some supplemental sleuthing, we've extracted 10 key facts about this creepy yet undeniably catchy song. Number one, it's got one of the most iconic guitar arpeggios of all time. It's one of that era's defining sounds, says Johnson, right up there with the punchy opening synths of Madonna's Material Girl, or that lurking intro to Michael Jackson's Billie Jean. Number two, its success is inextricable from the advent of MTV. By 1983, MTV had expanded enough in the States to be a formidable promoter of music, Johnson says. It was essentially national radio. The Police were already mainstays of the channel, but the video for Every Breath You Take was a really striking black and white clip. Number three, it's a very popular song at weddings, though it probably shouldn't be. After all, its primary lyrics, every breath you take and every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take, I'll be watching you, are more a cause for a restraining order than a romantic first dance. And number four, But You Could Be Forgiven for Thinking It's a Love Song. Listening to just the chorus of a song without context is a pop music tradition, Johnson says. It's like when Kurt Cobain sang, They Know Not What It Means. But I think that's a big part of why it sounds beautiful, the arpeggios, the gently undulating tempo. Sting does that mostly controlled vocal performance, and he does have a really beautiful voice. Number five, And If You Were Led to Believe Every Breath You Take is a sentimental tune, blame Puff Daddy, who's famously flipped the track into a tear-jerking tribute to the notorious B.I.G. with 1997's ubiquitous single, I'll Be Missing You. According to Johnson, that remake is a big part of the reason why Every Breath You Take is easily divorced from its dark original context. It introduced the song to an entirely new generation of youth. Number six, also, Every Breath You Take is not just a song about stalking. As it turned out, it was also a metaphor for Sting's extremely complicated feelings about the internal dynamics of the group, The Police. Number seven, in 2019, the performing rights organization BMI named Every Breath You Take the most performed song in its entire catalog. By that point, the song had been played on radio an estimated 15 million times. Number eight, in 2021, the song reached over 1 billion plays on Spotify. As of late last year, it was just one of nine songs from the 1980s to cross that threshold. Number nine, in 2022, its music video reached over 1 billion views on YouTube. It was the 225th video to achieve that milestone, and just the number seventh from the 1980s to do so. And finally, number 10, beyond the stats, the song's universal appeal is supported by science. In 2021, a team of Danish researchers studied over 4 million tracks on Spotify to determine what sort of songs are most popular at specific times of day. And they discovered that Every Breath You Take scored consistently at all hours, earning it the distinction of being the most universal, well-rounded song in pop history. And in local music news, we have this article entitled Dick Stork, a retrospective on radio broadcasting. This is published in WCPZ's Quarter Notes, the fall 2023 issue. Question, what was it like to broadcast Top of the Morning in Korat, Thailand, in the U.S. Air Force? Dick Stork replies, It was almost like a civilian job in many ways, though we did wear our khaki uniforms. The barracks was right across the street from the radio station, and, yeah, I'd get up early in the morning at about 5, and I'd get up, walk across the street, and go on the air at 6. Sometimes it was a little tougher to get up early in the morning because there was a beer garden on the base. We did a comedy routine, and there were pre-recorded comedy songs. I played top 40 music interspersed with safety reminders and public service announcements, as well as some national news. The top 40 music was just a touch of home for the guys over there. It was basically the number one station in town. Well, what has your experience in broadcast radio been like? Well, I saw an advertisement for a little microphone that connected to a radio. One of my parents' friends had a son who had already gotten that microphone and connected it up to a radio. I went up to his bedroom and broadcast to the folks downstairs. That was the start of something. We moved to Charlotte from New York in 1952, and I started watching a disc jockey do a remote broadcast from a Howard Johnson's restaurant on Saturday morning. When I caught the bug, the engineer there who ran the board began teaching me some engineering things and had me operate the knobs and stuff like that. I built my own little radio station in Charlotte, and the Charlotte News did an article on me. After the feature story came out, the manager of a local radio station in Charlotte called me up and said, "Congratulations on the story. How would you like to come out here?" I worked there in junior high and high school. I got my first FCC license in 1956 when I was 13 years old. Then WBTV gave me a scholarship to the High School Radio TV Institute at UNC. I got out of the Air Force in 1970 and went into television as the production manager of WRDU-TV, Channel 28. That's where I met Deborah Proctor, and I've been here 25 years now. Has classical music always been an interest to you? Well, I showed an interest quite early in the playing the piano at my grandma's house, and I was able to play by ear. My mom was a pianist and played a lot of Chopin. It was due to my mom's influence that I started liking music. How has the classical station changed since you joined? Well, obviously the internet made a great impact. 99.7 had just become 100,000 watt when I came here. Its antenna height was about 750 feet, which is about halfway up the tower. We did not have permission to broadcast from the very top of the tower yet. Then, though, through the kindness of the congressional leaders, including David Price, of the FCC, we were approved to go to the top of the tower. Now we have about 6 different low-power transmitters and a full-power station. Since I've been here, the big things were going online with streaming, setting up a satellite, and going to 100,000 watts from power at the top of the tower. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first one, which artist does Paul McCartney credit with teaching him everything he knows? Was that A, Picasso, B, Elvis Presley, C, Little Richard, or D, John Lennon? Correct answer? Answer C, Little Richard. As noted in a 5/22/23 issue of Parade magazine, Paul McCartney credited Little Richard with teaching him everything he knows. In fact, he was so influential to Paul McCartney, the Beatles said that Long Tall Sally was the first song he sang in public. McCartney reportedly said to pull off a Little Richard vocal, you had to leave your body. Recognized as one of the founding fathers of rock and roll, Little Richard died in 2020 at age 87. His cause of death was bone cancer. I try to be a guide for people, to make their darkness bright and to make the pathway light, and never to condemn or control or criticize, he once said. With his deliciously distinctive sound, Little Richard was indeed a great light and a pioneer who transformed rock and roll. To borrow from James Brown, he was the first to put the funk in rhythm. Mixing blues and gospel, Little Richard's music raised the roof with hits like Tutti Frutti, Long Tall Sally, and Good Golly Miss Molly. But not only did Little Richard make an indelible mark on music, he inspired legions of musicians with his unique verve, passion, and fearless lyrics. As Elton John wrote in Rolling Stone in 1973, I heard Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis, and that was it. Little Richard's songs were recorded by everyone from the Beatles to Elvis Costello, to the Kinks, to the Everly Brothers. Bob Dylan even wrote that his goal was to join Little Richard in his high school yearbook. And when he was 9 years old, David Bowie bought a saxophone, hoping to be like Little Richard. Without him, I think myself and half of my contemporaries wouldn't be playing music, said Bowie. Born Richard Wayne Penniman in Macon, Georgia, Little Richard got his first record deal with RCA when he was 19 years old. He had 11 brothers and sisters. I was born in the slums. My daddy sold whiskey, bootleg whiskey, he told Rolling Stone in 1970. He earned his singing chops singing at church and developed those unmistakable woos. The legendary guitarist Jimi Hendrix said it so well. I want to do with my guitar what Little Richard does with his voice. And the answer to our second question, who is the only country artist to have had a top 20 hit on the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart for six straight decades? Was it A, Hank Williams, B, Dolly Parton, C, Willie Nelson, or D, Loretta Lynn? Correct answer? Answer B, Dolly Parton. In a career that has thrived for more than 60 years, Parton has broken quite a few records. 25 number one hits on the Billboard charts, 41 top 10 country albums, 9 Grammy Awards, 43 Grammy nominations, and 4 Guinness World Records, including most decades on the U.S. Hot Country Songs chart, female, 7 decades, most number one hits on the U.S. Hot Country Songs chart by a female artist, 25 hits. Most hits on the U.S. Hot Country Songs chart by a female artist, 109 hits. And most decades with a top 20 hit on the U.S. Hot Country Songs chart, 6. Outros conclude programs and offer a way to say goodbye. As we leave you today, let's hear Paul Simon bidding adieu to his hearing and therefore his recording voice, as he and Art Garfunkel beautifully say so long to one of their heroes, architect Frank Lloyd Wright.
So long, Frank Lloyd Wright, I can't believe your song is gone so soon. I barely learned the tune so soon, so soon. I'll remember Frank Lloyd Wright.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.
All good things may come.